Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, December 26th, 2001, day after Christmas. Hope everybody had a good Christmas. Yes, here we say Merry Christmas. We can say Happy Holidays too, but I prefer to say Merry Christmas, in spite of the fact that a lot of the politically correct crowd and the pro-Zionist, pro-Israel crowd does not like that. Title, but even though I'm a non-militant atheist, I realize and I accept and I have no problem with the fact that America is a nation of constitutionally protected religious freedom with a Christian majority. So Merry Christmas to everyone. And again, thanks to bbsradio.com for always promoting free speech and free press, free minds, free markets. Today, and this is a pre-recorded interview for this evening, and I'm going to have my friend back, Dr. Ray. Dr. Ray was born in Egypt and raised in Syria. So, of course, he has a Christian background. He speaks fluent Arabic. His father was a diplomat, and he's been in this country for many years, so well-educated and funny, and way up on things in the Middle East. And as you know, on this show, we talk about history, economics, geography, political science, geopolitics, and of course, I'm always prepared to slam on Zionism, and I'm very critical of Israel. So that's where I'm coming from. And Dr. Ray is going to give us some of his take on the current events that are going on. So with that, with all that intro, I am going to welcome Dr. Ray back. Dr. Ray, are you out there, sir?
Oh, yes, sir. Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome back to Third Stream View. Would you like some tea or coffee?
I'm already having my coffee. Thank you.
Good, good. So, yeah, it's been a while since you've been on. Sorry we didn't get together the other day because I had our numbers crossed, a few things here and there. But no problem. You're back here. The world will now hear what you have to say about a few things here. Again, you were born in Egypt, although you're not a pharaoh. You have no pyramids awaiting you.
And then, no.
Thank you.
No,
I wrote that. And then you were raised in Syria.
Yes, throughout my childhood, yes.
Which is rather a secular Muslim country of a Shiite background, and now it's being, it's got its problems. I believe that it's being peppered by CIA and Mossad, and they're trying to overthrow the regime. I'm not a big fan of Assad, but I think that this is a way that's overblown, and it's a way to try to destroy Syria with Iran coming up next. I believe that's what the globalists, the Zionists, and the CIA and MI6, I believe that's sort of on the horizon.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because you're right, and at the same time, you're wrong. Well, in a sense, let me start with where you're right. You're right that there is a Zionistic plan on dissecting the Middle East. You're wrong on one thing, is that, Syria itself, believe it or not, its history actually is quite amusing, because if you go back before Assad and his predecessor, his own father, you will see that Syria, in a span of 6 months, have changed almost, 12 presidents. So the overthrowing of the government is nothing new to Syria. It just took a longer time than it should.
So, well, again, right. I totally agree. You'll get no argument from me on that, because your history of Syria is better than mine, although my overall history is quite good. But look what happened to Egypt. You know, you get rid of something, you don't know what you're going to get in return. So that's my worry about Syria. What's going to take its place? Are they going to have...
Here's my prediction, and this is exactly how I see it. Syria is ran country right now. It's ran by a minority group, which is the Alawites. and they are a sect of the Shiites.
Right.
Now, Iran obviously supports the Alawites, hence why Iran is always good friends with Syria. And so on, if you look further west, you will get into Lebanon and you'll see Hezbollah, which also supports Syria. Now, in order for you to control the Middle East, all you have to do is create some sort of commotion where you can actually break the barriers between these people. And my prediction is that, yes, World War III will begin in the Middle East somewhere. And here's how it's going to play out, or so that's what my prediction is. Yes, the Zionist plan is in progress. What they did was, or so the Syrian government says, is that there were some, invisible hands that are trying to overthrow the government, and they're trying to rally up the people and trying to push up the people to overthrow the government. That much, I believe, it's true. Some people are dressed as soldiers or police or some sort of authority. And what they're doing is that they're opening fire on regular people, and so they're blaming the government for that. Now, doing so, how do you deal with it? There's two ways to deal with it. Either you investigate harshly, which is exactly what happened, or you actually, submit to it and say, well, yeah, we did it, and we're sorry, and I'll just step down. So they took the most common, approach, which is a dictatorship kind of a approach, which we're going to squash it quick and fast before anything happens. You see, Egypt also was a victim of the same exact plan.
Right.
But Egypt, however, believe it or not, Egypt was at the brink of doing so. All it needed was a little push. I predicted Egypt's uprising literally months before it happened. I remember talking to a friend of mine at work, and he's an Egyptian. I says, you know what, if things keep up the way they are, people are going to take to the streets, and the future is going to be grim. No, that would never happen. I says, look, the government is extremely corrupt, you see. And with corruption, there's so much corruption you can do, and, the people are going to have to, put their foot down. And so that's exactly what happened with Egypt. Egypt did not need much work. All Egypt needed was, well, are you going to stand up for what's right, or are you just going to sit here and take it? And that's exactly why the people revoluted. And then they just took to the streets and said, hey, you know what? We want a change of regime. We want a change of structure. We want change, which makes perfect sense. Now, when it comes to Syria, now here's where it gets interesting. Syria was a very difficult thing to overtake, because since Bashar al-Assad took the office, he is the exact opposite of his father. He does not rule with an iron fist. He does not rule with a maddening way of putting people into jail and scaring tactics. And he was not a dictator by far. As a matter of fact, he brought in a lot of money into the country. He started investing into the country. He actually cracked down on a lot of corruption, and he really, really took the country to a higher level where the people had a culture shock, you see. And it makes perfect sense, too, because look at case in point, look at Russia. For years being a communist country, and then all of a sudden it's an open country now, people don't know what to make of it. I'm free to do whatever the hell I want. Okay, what defines freedom? Oh, I can do whatever the hell I want. Now I can do it. So what happened was he opened the gates and people flooded through them. And that's exactly where Egypt, struggled, is that there was no gates, there was nothing open, and people had to break these gates down. Syria is the exact opposite. Syria was actually showing a very, very good potential in growth, both economically and politically. Syria was looking really good as time progressed, and on the international point of view, Syria was really raising eyebrows. There was production, there was economical growth, and self-reliance. Syria did not need to import much, but it did export a whole lot. So you figure Syria was really having a good, bright future. So how do you destruct such a perfect system? How do you really corrupt it? What you do is you actually do what we'd like to call false flag. Have people dressed as authoritarians, start, you know, shooting people, and obviously blame it to the government. And by doing that, you false flag the government. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Bashar is a saint. Far from it. But he's very open-minded. He is.
Are you saying there is Mossad or CIA dressed up as Syrian soldiers doing this?
Well, no. They don't have to be Mossad or CIA. They could be Lebanese. You have to understand there's a lot of Lebanese, the Sunni Lebanese extremists are, you know, working for Saudi Arabia, working for
Israel.
You know, well, yeah, Israel, that would be one of them. And what they do is they pay down, you know, they pay people to do such crazy, you know, operations. And so, you know, these are all black ops. And let's face it, it succeeded. Unfortunately, well, it succeeded.
That's what the CIA uses some of their drug revenue for, to buy off people or pay for things that, you know, Congress won't give them the money for. So, but if things were sort of hunky-dory under the sun and there wasn't that much problem, the sun, Assad, I'm surprised there was such a revolution if things weren't as bad as, you know, you seem to make it out to be.
Well, see, here's how this works. You false flag the government, first of all, which is step one, and that succeeded. Step two, look at the minority versus the majority. The majority is Sunni. The minority is the one that rules the country. All you have to do is say, hey, you're the majority. You have the right for the presidency. You have the right to run your government as you please. So it's riling them up, basically, and paying a lot of people to take to the streets and say, hey, wait a minute, we're the majority, we rule.
You mean Syria has a Sunni majority?
Yes, indeed.
I thought they had a good Shiite 72%. Majority.
No. It's the exact opposite. They are the minority.
You call the Alawites? Who's the leaders? What tribe?
Alawites.
So they're a Shia minority that runs Syria.
They are a direct sect of the Shiites, correct.
Well, there hasn't been much tension between Shia and Sunni in Syria in the past, has there?
No, well, there has and hasn't been. If we go back into the 80s, the father, which is Hafez al-Assad, the predecessor, he did something really, really, really weird. There was the Islamic Brotherhood, which is a Sunni extremist sect, and they tried to overtake the country. He literally ruled with an iron fist. There was what they like to call the Hama Massacre. And the Hama Massacre, which is Hama, which is a town, or a city, if you will, and he surrounded it and literally leveled it to the ground. He left no one alive in that whole entire place, because that was their city, or rather, that was their headquarters. And so he did not allow anyone, be it Sunni or Shiite, to, you know, speak up or give their point of view. But the Islamic Brotherhood back in then, they were really extremists, and they did. And it was not something that the government actually claimed. They claimed it, that they did these explosions in Syria for, well, I would say a little over 2 years. They really, really destroyed their own country to show that they are the majority. And they wanted to rile up the people, which is the Sunni, and, of course, take over the government and overthrow Hafez al-Assad. But Hafez, however, did not give them the chance to breathe. So he was a ruthless killer in one end. On the other, he only protected his country from these thugs, to say the least.
I've always thought that the son was much better than the father.
Oh, yes, the son was much better. I was talking about the father throughout
right,
the
time. Right, right, yeah, I know. And because he was quite the authoritarian, and he caused the death of a lot of thousands of people, as I understand. Right. But still, I mean, speaking from an American standpoint, we lament a lot of this stuff that's going around the world, but the more we intervene, the more blowback there is. Civil war is a constant somewhere throughout the globe.
Well, yeah, Iraq is one of it right now. Iraq is really on the brink of civil war.
And they're not bringing all the troops home. That's BS. They'll bring a certain amount home, but there's still some there. And there wouldn't have been a civil war without this stupid invasion of Iraq, probably, because Saddam kept a lid on sectarian violence. I mean, might not have been a nice guy, but, you know, And that was another secular Muslim country that they destroyed. You know, yes, he fought against fundamentalism for 30 years.
It's funny you mentioned Saddam wasn't a nice guy, yet kept, you know, sectarian violence in check. Exactly the same thing with Hafez al-Assad, which is the father of Bashar al-Assad, apparently.
And Saddam, there was a, sorry, in Iraq, there was a small Christian community. There was a small Jewish community. Alcohol was tolerated. Women did not have to dress a certain way. It had the highest number of college-educated Arabs, and Bush destroyed it and all those things, and he caused the plight of over 2 million refugees, and Bush father and son, their military, both deliberately bombed Iraqi water treatment centers, power plants, sewage, this sort of thing. That's unconscionable.
It is.
You know, they want to get back at the dictator, so what do? They hurt the regular people. And plus the fact that, of course, that Iraq and Afghanistan are strewn with depleted uranium. Well, I don't know if you've seen the deformed babies in Iraq, but it's just awful.
It's funny you mentioned that, because you have to destroy the infrastructure of the country in order for you to rebuild it.
Yeah.
You see, that's how this works. In order for you to send these contracts out to big government-associated companies, you have to destroy something. So how do you give them these contracts? Destroy the country, destroy the infrastructure, roads, water refineries, even oil refineries, et cetera, et cetera, and so forth. And, okay, let's give out these, you know, contracts to these bigger companies, and let's see what they make of it. And that's exactly
all those companies are gouging at the tax trough. They're being paid through our taxes, so this is not – rebuilding from a free enterprise standpoint. It's statism, and then we have to, go along with what the federal government does. So, you know, it not only does the federal government mess up so much here at home, it's doing it abroad. And, if they start a war with Iran, they're going to really cause a mess, because they will close the Straits of Hormuz. There'll be blowback. There'll be retaliation. It's just going to be a whole can of worms that should not be messed with. There's just no need to.
It's funny because you pointed on something really interesting. Because remember, if you recall, I was mentioning that World War III will begin in the Middle East. And the reason why I say this is because, all the Shiites or Shiite alliances, they're going to actually rise up to the occasion and try to save Syria from falling. You have to remember the United States and the Gulf region, that includes, of course, I'm talking in the Middle East Gulf. The Gulf region, they're very well allies, and they are the Sunni sect, and they will not raise a finger on fighting a war. However, they'll get the big dog, that be the United States, to fight the war for them. Well, hence why you're going to have a World War III situation happening pretty soon, because, they want Iran out of the picture.
But
now,
the United States
obviously is going to have to start the war with Iran. Can you imagine what the Russians and the Chinese are going to do? And the Chinese are very good allies with Iran and Syria. And they're not going to sit there and watch their top, money maker really get beat. They're going to come into their aid, and that's World War III as we know it.
I think China and Russia should provide Iran with the best surface-to-air missiles possible. Because an air force is expensive to maintain, but when you have serious, ground to surface to air missiles, then you put a real, hedgerow in front of Israeli jets and other invaders. And I believe the main, instigator in this, though, is Israel. And if they attack, they're going to expect the U.S. to carry their water for them, And there's absolutely no reason to attack Iran. They haven't threatened anyone. They haven't invade anyone for centuries. And again, like I'm fond of saying, Ahmadinejad never said he wanted to wipe Israel off the map. He said something more to the effect of, just like the former Soviet regime vanished from the pages of history, I long to see the same thing happen to the Zionist regime fading from the pages of history. That's more of what he said. And Iran realizes that, Israel could immediately vaporize them. So there's a lot of war propaganda and BS involved in all this.
Absolutely.
It'll be the worst thing. It'll be a terrible thing. And this country's already bankrupt. Obama's become more of a warrior almost than Bush. And if he does this, if he goes along with this, you know, the Peace Prize winner, it's just going to make things so much worse.
Well, yeah. I've actually called it World War III because that's exactly what's going to happen.
Several people call it World War III. I haven't come to that conclusion yet, but I'm not opposed to it. I see it. I think the writing's on the wall for it. But the outcome is going to be very bad because this country's already broke. It's overextended. The currency is collapsing. It's just going to make it worse.
Well, yes and no. With war comes also awards, you see. If we are go into a third war, which we are about to, and the writing, like you said, is on the wall, you have to understand you're going to have to form something called the draft, because at this point the United States does not have enough manpower, so on and so forth. And considering World War III, it's going to repeat much like World War II. Every factory must stop manufacturing, let's make weapons, and let's go destroy the enemy. At what cost? Well, here's what's happening. The Saudi Arabians have literally a well of money, not just petroleum, but also money, which is, you know, that is basically what we're really looking at. We're not looking at domination, world domination. Really, we can care less, to be honest with you, being an American, that is. But what we care for, really, is money. Money rules the world. Bottom line, money is everything. Saudis have plenty of it. Deplete the Saudis from the money, and you control the world. Simply put, how do you do that? Create propaganda. Let them believe that Iran is their enemy. And then let them take control of the situation. And from there on, we're going to fight the war for them at the cost of money. So on and so forth. Don't forget, Iran is a self-reliant country. It makes its own missiles. It manufactures its own weapons. They don't just make things or manufacture things or develop things on their own. They have allies, China and Russia. These two are practically toe-to-toe with the United States when it comes to technology, some if not better.
And nukes.
Exactly. And so, you know, Iran can make its own nuke. It's not a problem with that. They know how. They have power to do so, and they're not going to sit there and wait for us to tell them, no, 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 you can't have it. Let's see how that happened with, say, North Korea. North Korea, it made itself a new country. We sat there and said, no, 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 you can't do it, yet they went on and did it anyway.
But they didn't border, they're not near Israel, though.
Well, they're near Japan. They're near China.
Right.
Well, China's not afraid of it because, of course, China is like Mother Russia. So
China's their only lifeline, pretty much.
Exactly. And so, you know, that's why we could not do anything to North Korea, because Mother Russia and Mother China would not do anything to North Korea. And therefore, we could not intervene and stop them from manufacturing their own nuclear weapons. Hence here, it's going to be the same exact thing to the Iranians. We're going to come to a point, we're going to say, no, 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 you can't do it, you can't have it. Here's two solutions that might happen. One solution was, we're going to do exactly what we did with North Korea. No, 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 you can't have it. Oh, screw you, we did it anyway. Or solution number two, we're going to kill you. We're going to bomb you to death. You cannot have these nuclear weapons.
Well,
now, you know, and that's really what it looks like. We're going to start a war, another war with Iran over nuclear weapons. But in reality, that's not what's happening. In reality, we're actually the big dog for Saudi Arabia. Let's face it, they don't have military power. We are the military power for them, for the cost of, well, money and oil enrichment.
Well, Israel's got a big military, a large air force. They can do it on themselves with their 300 nukes, but they're going to want to drag us into it. And look at Iran now. It's already got American troops on both sides of it, in Iraq and Afghanistan. No wonder it's concerned. And plus, if you have a nuke, you know, that's one thing the neocons have realized about Iran, is that if you have a nuke, Uncle Sam tends not to bother with you or mess with you. It's not so much that they would use their nuke, Iran, it's that when you have a nuke, the big powers don't bother you, or they can't bother you as much because of the consequences. So that's
right,
another
respect
reason.
You a little more.
Yes, that's right. So I'm not worried if Iran had a nuke, you know, and you hear Bachman and all the other candidates except Ron Paul are indebted to the Israeli lobby, and that's where this is coming from. You know, whatever is Israel's problem, we have to worry about it. Well, you know, I'm pro-American. I'm an America first. We got our own problems. We don't need to be allied with Israel, our only ally in the Middle East. For what? What good has it done us? It's just more grief and aggravation. I'd rather make peace and trade with the Muslim countries than aggravate and antagonize them.
You know, right now, as a country, as the United States, as an American speaking, we are not at any situation to go into any kind of militant war in any shape or form.
Syria, one of their, if they're good friends with China and Iran, what is China, if we start another war, is China going to continue to lend us money, especially when it's against one of their allies and friends? I don't think so. We're already heavily in debt. We didn't have this much debt when, at World War II, as I recall. So the country's already bankrupt, and it's just going to make everything worse. I fear civil war and food riots at home.
Agreed. But see, China will still lend us money. This is where I kind of disagree with you.
You think?
Because, absolutely. How do you weaken the United States? Give them money, let them go to war, and tell them, pay me.
Well, they're paying you back with deflated dollars. So, it's sort of the U.S. gains because they've inflated and made the value of the dollar worth less. So, China's sort of getting a bad deal out of all this. But I can't, just using our banker, China, to create another war against one of their friends, Syria and then Iran is just madness. It's just so unnecessary.
No, see, I disagree because, China is doing something what they like to call, or actually in the political world, they call this the economical assassin. Economical assassination is when you give too much money that you know the country will not pay you back, be that as it may, in dollars, in gold, whatever. If you know that that country will not pay you back, and you know for a fact it won't pay you back, you give them more money, you dish more money out to them, and now you own them. So now you can put bases in their country, you can purchase the entire country, really, at the cost of the loan that you actually have. So, which is exactly what happened in Africa. Look at Africa. Africa is the prime example of what we call, economical assassinations. The United States did it. The Russians did it. Oh, and the top of the food chain on that, and the most gaining country of it all, was the Netherlands. But that was back in the 1800s. The Netherlands started loaning money and actually giving too much money to these poor African countries back in the day, and they did not have, of course, government really per se. They were kingdoms. So they kept feeding the king's money, keeping the king as a king, and in reality they were reaping all the benefits of the land. Hence why Africa is one of the poorest one of the poorest continents on the universe. And the problem with that, it's not because it doesn't have resources. Africa has plenty of resources, beyond your imagination. But the problem is they're owned by loans that have been sustained since the 1800s.
They've also kicked out the colonialists, and then they imposed Marxism on their countries. They've destroyed their own countries from within. It's a basket case still, and it has a lot of resources. Now, China's been investing in Africa, but, Obama wants to kick China out. They kicked him out of Libya. That's another thing. They don't want China investing. But China's not sending military and threatening countries. They're doing business deals, like as Ron Paul said. China's acting more capitalistically, even though they have a communist government.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm – which proves my theory, is that China is playing the role of the economic assassin. I'll give you money, but I own you at the end of the day.
Yeah, but they could do that, but I can't see, even if the U.S. is broke, they're not going to allow China to have bases here or whatnot. China's giving money to a country that's a very strong nuclear power, if you're talking about lending it to us. So, maybe this is all unprecedented. Who knows how it's going to turn out, but it's not going to turn out good, especially if there's war. And war only makes the state, even for the winner, war makes the government more bigger and more powerful and more centralization of power.
Right. Which we saw that in the Roman Empire and the Nazi Empire. And that's exactly what happened.
American Empire.
Well, we are on the same path, ironically, and that's a disaster waiting to happen. In my opinion, the best way we really should avoid these problems is the way you mentioned it, is to leave the Middle East alone. Leave it alone. You have allies, be that as it may, but we're not coming to your aid. Not now, anyway. let's put it this way. We are not ready to help anyone as of now. Give us about 10 years or so. Let us concentrate on the United States economically and, well, militarily, if you want to go that way. And let's talk about it 10 years from now. We'll worry about it later. But for now, we need to actually, like you said, concentrate on the United States. Right now, economically speaking, the people are really hurt. We are facing the biggest, perhaps the most controversial problem in the United States. If you think that the recession in the 20s was really bad, we're about to experience worse. There will be a food depletion, money depletion into the United States. Resources are going to stop. Manufacturing is going to stop. And guess what? We are in a serious, serious, serious depression if we keep the path that we're on. However, if we actually stop helping people, cut all the money out to everyone that we really are allies with, and start investing in our own country, whatever happened to the research and development? The United States used to be the leader of research and development. Now we don't have research or development. All we have is, well, let's put it this way. Theoretically speaking, we can do this, and let's manufacture it in China. Again, we do not manufacture our own. That's a problem. That's a disaster. Any economist can actually tell you if a country stops making its own goods, for that matter, the country is actually facing a disaster. Not necessarily right away, but down the road. And that's exactly what we're going to be facing. We're not manufacturing anything. Even cars, believe it or not, are being assembled but not manufactured. There's a difference. Being assembled, that means the parts are coming from elsewhere. Manufacturing means you are making the parts and assembling it at the same spot.
Well,
that's the problem.
I think that's exaggerated a bit today, though. We're not manufacturing that much. Yes, there is a lot overseas. Plus, American industry, I mean, if they're so heavily taxed and overregulated, I wouldn't want to do business here either. That's why they're going overseas. And apparently, as far as I, you know, Ron Paul would cut off all foreign aid, as I would too. But apparently, cutting off all foreign aid, including Israel, apparently now that's anti-Semitic if you don't want to give Israel money. But I don't care because I deal with that topic here all the time. It's nonsensical, this whole mess. And I also favor, I'm all for free trade, but I also pretty much favor an arms embargo because it's subsidized by taxpayers. It's causing more trouble throughout the world. And then we get involved in more civil wars, to undo the arms and weapons we've sent them in the first place. I mean, I would embargo Israel, especially for arms. So my solution for the Middle East stands the same. We should find immediate common ground with Jews united against Zionism. When you really look into their websites and whatnot, you really get a good picture of things. And, of course, the Israeli peace movement and Israeli human rights groups, because this mess is just getting worse. Also, Israel helped to foment Israel helped to foment Hamas as a counterbalance to Hezbollah.
Well, I wouldn't go against Hezbollah. I would say actually Hamas against the other political parties that they have in the PLO group.
But especially Hezbollah. And so Israel talks about it's the only democracy in the Middle East, which to me is BS anyway. But so then the Palestinians or whoever else, so they have their democracy and they vote for Hamas to represent them. So now Israel, you know, turns that down as if that's not democracy. The people voted. That's who they voted for.
Well, you know, it's funny because Hamas is not only the only political party that there is. Don't forget, there's also the PLO, which is the Palestinian something-something party.
Liberation Organization. Don't hear much about them anymore.
Right. And so Hamas, yes, it is the, how should one say, the jackal among the other parties that there is. However, it's not necessarily designed specifically for Hezbollah. Not to protect Hezbollah, but Hezbollah does not care for Hamas. As a matter of fact, Hezbollah is not even considering Hamas a threat. Hezbollah considers one thing and one and only thing as a threat. Anything that actually imposes a threat to Hezbollah is a threat. Hamas is not, because Hamas is very small numbers. They're not very well trained, and they're not very well politically tied. So they don't look at them as a threat, really, and they're not taking them seriously. However, they keep an eye on them, mind you. So I wouldn't go as far as to say that. But I would go far as to say this. Hezbollah cares for one and only thing. They say that they care for Lebanon, them being Lebanese and patriotic. They care for, well, bringing back the promised land to the Palestinians. That's what they call for. And at the same time, they actually say that we will protect our land since we don't have a government that would sustain protection to the country. Fair enough. I will agree with you. However, in the 80s and the 90s, there was a big disarmament in the country, in Lebanon. Everybody surrendered their arms. Hezbollah refused to do so. And Hezbollah paid its way through government to keep its own weapons. There is a problem with that. That means that the government is corrupt. That means that the government has been bought by Hezbollah. Iran has a lot of money, and Iran is investing in Hezbollah because they're actually showing a good return. They're holding on to their weapons. They are the puppets of Iran, and they'll do anything Iran tells them to do so. So therefore, what is Hezbollah by definition? Are they a terrorist group or are they not? It's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. They are protecting the country. You see what I'm saying? They are protecting the country. And at the same time, they're not. They're protecting their own assets. What are their assets? Iran. Iran is the biggest assets because that's the one that's throwing the money at them. That's the banker. You don't protect your bank, you're going to be bankrupt. You're going to be out of business. And that's why Iran means the world to them. So they'll do anything Iran will tell them to do. And it's coming.
Well, the other problem, another problem was in the early 2000s, Saddam and I believe Iran also, they didn't want to use dollars anymore because they see the destruction of the dollar, it's how much value it's lost. They wanted to use euros. Not that that's doing very well today, but, you know, and that gets the globalists and the U.S. globalists jittery and upset because they don't want that to happen. They don't want the dollar not to be the, reserve currency in the world, but they've trashed the value of it, you know.
Well, that's true.
Like Ron Paul says, all empires collapse, and this one's no different. You know, it's going to happen, so it's better to disengage now before it happens and, you know, cut our losses and repair the damage and fix things.
Well, absolutely. We have a problem in the United States right now, and the problem is internally, not externally. We should not concentrate on external politics. External politics will sit there and watch the world go by as long as we are feeding our children, making us go to work, and providing money for the government to actually sustain itself. Right now, we owe a lot of money. That is a disaster. That is a disaster, and it's continuing on. Be that as it may, whether it's Bush, whether it's Obama, or whoever the newcomer will be, if we continue the same path, we are on the brink of disaster, destruction. And here's the problem. The biggest problem of them all is that the United States, geographically speaking, is disaster prone. Let's not go far.
The weather alone.
Geologists are speaking up the wazoo. They're saying any minute now, Los Angeles might sink in the water. That's a disaster. We don't have the money. We don't have the funding. We don't have the power or the manpower to actually rescue the entire city of Los Angeles. It's impossible. Let's face it. Hurricane Katrina happened right when we were in the middle of the war. Two wars, mind you, which is the Afghani war and the Iraqi war. And what happened to that? That was a disaster on epical scale. Why? Because we could not come to their aid fast enough. Why? Because we don't have resources. They're all over in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And that's exactly the problem that we're facing right now. That money that has to go to wars has to be in reserve for disaster times. FEMA cannot sustain itself. FEMA's been screaming up the wazoo saying, we don't have money to do what we're supposed to do. Where's the money that we were supposed to invest in this? And it's not happening. So the problem here is internally, not externally. We should not be in Iraq. We should not be in Afghanistan. We shouldn't be anywhere. We should be here, right on this ground.
Exactly.
Okay? We should be here investing in our country.
Exactly, but more war will just make it worse, further into debt, more economic problems at home, more killing, more blowback. You know, it's like an endless, you know, they just want to keep this going. And that's the whole neocon thing. They think this American greatness, and they're pro-war, pro-empire, and unquestionably supporting Israel. These people with their dual, especially these people with their dual passports and such. So, you know, that's what I see going down, and I don't like it. I don't want anything to do with more war. And I'm not a pacifist per se. I'm very pro-gun rights, gun ownership, and a national defense, but not an empire, not stationing troops, you know, Japan, South Korea, Western Europe, these rich allies we're defending, and then they turn around and hammer us on trade. So this huge, vast military, industrial, congressional banking complex is a drag on the economy and society, and it's just pulling us down.
Oh, that's a given. Unfortunately, it's true. Unfortunately.
People are waking up to it, but all the other candidates except Ron Paul serve. They serve the status quo. They serve the elite. They serve the globalist empire. Only Ron Paul speaks truth to power. That's why they hate him. Hopefully he will do well in Iowa. We think he's going to win, and he could do well in New Hampshire and South Carolina. So, you know, so many conservatives, Republicans say, well, we really like Ron Paul's economic policies, but he's crazy or he's wacko on his foreign policy. But he's just as right about foreign policy. He's just as correct. History proves him right. His predictions are right. So that's the point I was going to bring home. He's just as right about foreign policy as he is about the wars, the economy, the Fed, sound money.
Well, I want to say I agree with you. I haven't looked into Ron Paul's campaign.
I have.
Or to be honest with you, I didn't look at anybody's campaign, including President Obama's campaign. So let's put it this way. I am not looking into anybody's campaign. This year I am not going to vote, and I would not want to vote anyway, because no matter who you vote to, it looks like it's going to be the wrong guy. Well, there is nobody up to the plate.
Only Ron Paul. And I won't vote like I did in 2008 because I couldn't stand McCain. I couldn't stand Obama, so I didn't vote. If I can't write Ron Paul's name in, I won't vote, because all the other candidates, just like Bush, they serve the big banks, Wall Street, the military-industrial complex, and the all-powerful Israeli lobby. And Ron Paul doesn't. He speaks truth to power. And when there's been many votes in Congress, when it's 434-1, many times, that just tells you what consistency the man has. He can't be bought, and he's not part of the establishment. He speaks against it. So that's why they don't like him. But no time has anybody made such a ripple like he has. And they're worried. They don't want to see it. They don't want, you know, they've tried to, marginalize him in the press and not give him any coverage. Well, that happened 4 years ago, but it's not as easy this time around. And if he wins Iowa, you know, it's going to really make a different take on things, because he's very popular, and especially with our young people. And they're the ones that are inheriting the debt and the wars. And when he speaks at colleges, campuses, he's got huge crowds. He has huge crowds, and his volunteers and everything. The other candidates don't have that. They're just the status quo. They are the problem. And if you see the debates, you know, like Ron Paul had said on in the Tonight Show last week, he was on. He did wonderfully. He mentioned Jay asked him about the other candidates, and when he got to Bachman, he goes, "Well, she really hates Muslims, wants to kill a whole lot of them." You know, so that's what they, you know, there's the anti-Muslim thing and the whole demonization of Islam and Muslims because of 9/11, which I think was perpetrated by Mossad. Who benefited from 9/11? Israel and the military-industrial complex. That's how I see it.
I'm not going to argue, because there is benefits to these people you mentioned.
Yeah, but not for you and me.
No, well, you know, I don't want to...
We're for these bastards.
No, but to be honest with you, I really don't want to get into the internal politics of things. My biggest problem here is that we really should stop worrying about the Middle East more often than none.
Exactly.
And start really worrying about the United States, which, you know, if it be Ron Paul or a Republican, or for that matter, Obama, as long as they are keeping the path, we don't want that. That's not what I'm really rooting for. I'm hoping against hope that we change our policies internally before anything else, because, you know,
exactly.
it's a very bureaucratic system. And, you know, if you really want to do something, you really can't do it without, well, jumping through hoops. Everything has a law. Everything has a rule. I'm all for that. I'm okay with that. As a matter of fact, I'm not an anarchist. But I do want government to be a little more transparent. I want the government to be, you know, a little more for the people rather than to the people. You know what I mean? You know,
if we did away with about 95% of the federal government, we'd all be much better off. The states would handle their own issues. They would have their own FEMAs, if you will. They would have their own contingency plans. You know, that's how it should run. And it's the centralization of power. All governments, you know, centralize more power, and the U.S. is no different. And it's the most powerful, biggest, richest central state in the world has ever known.
Well, yeah,
although it's not its own self-destruct.
We're no different than any other country. I mean, logically, we're not, just like you mentioned. But it happens to be that we are slightly, well, a whole lot bigger than pretty much everybody around the world. But you got to keep remember this, and this is very important, which we keep forgetting that. And in a way, we refuse to remember that. The enemy did not choose to be the enemy. The enemy actually is not the enemy. The enemy is my brother, because, first of all, he's a human being like you and I. He has family. He's somebody's son, somebody's father, somebody's brother or sister. And if we just keep that in mind, that we are not looking at the enemy as a human being, well, humanity as we know it is going to collapse on itself. We are our worst enemy. You know,
well, that's true.
You know, we kill people under greed. We kill people under, you know, religion. We kill people for, you know, whatever.
See, I don't like to say we. I say the federal government, because we, you and I, do not kill people. The federal government does. Governments kill people. And I've had this discussion slash debate with some others about government and the private sector. I don't care who you are. GM, Ford, Exxon, Halliburton, they cannot draft anybody, and they cannot tax anybody. So only the state can do that. So you say, well, so then they're lobbied by these big companies and whatnot, the corporate state, but still the private sector. What you think, if Exxon declared war on Iran tomorrow, people would laugh. They don't have the authority to do that. They don't have a military. They can only the state can do that. So that's where that is the source. Everything else is the symptom. So, you know, this is what the federal government does. It wreaks havoc at home and abroad. And I like to say it's probably 95% out of its constitutional boundaries.
Well, you know, just like you said, are you part of the solution or the problem? And, you know, and in my opinion, there is no solution, but there's only one solution, really. That's just my opinion. Really, we should stop looking on the outside and look internally.
The solution is to maintain the foreign policy that the founders recommended, which was armed neutrality and free trade. The best thing we can do is stay out of these other countries' problems and their alliances with them, which the founders also warned about. This just drags us down. It costs us money. It causes resentment. It's not worth it. It's totally, you know, it's so unnecessary. If you want to help other people in other countries, you should be free to write a check and send the help. But otherwise, it just makes things worse. And by the way, you talked about enemies, our enemies. Well, let me say for the record clearly, Iran is not my enemy. Iraqis were never my enemy. Afghanis were not my enemy. But the media and the government says our enemies are our enemies. Well, who? They're not my enemies. I don't have a beef with them. I don't like terrorism, but I see why it's caused, and it's caused by the intervention of the federal government. It's coming back, it's blowback, like Ron Paul talked about. So, you know, those aren't my enemies. Ahmadinejad is not my enemy. I don't look at the world that way, or these countries. They never threatened the United States. Vietnam never threatened the United States.
No, never.
Yugoslavia never threatened the United States. To me, that was one of the worst things Clinton ever did, was bomb the hell out of that country, including their infrastructure, when, you know, Britain or France alone could have handled that situation. So, you know, it's the state that does these things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? That's a very, 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 very good way to look at it, because, like you said, they're not our enemy. I hate to say it, but I don't know Ahmadinejad personally, so I can't really put him on my blacklist or my good list. But as far as I'm concerned, as a leader of his own world, you know, you got to respect the man. He, like you said, he never really gave any warnings to the United States, if you do so and so, we will go and fight in war, you know.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's interesting. You know, then again, it's the unspoken word that's really scaring people, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, from the
everybody
U.S.
Everybody looks beautiful. Yeah, I'm sorry?
The unspoken word coming from us.
Well, there you go. That's exactly what I mean. The unspoken word is the one that we're, you know, we're actually scaring a whole lot of people. The United States is thinking of actually launching a full-on war against Iran.
The U.S. federal government.
Be that as it may, everybody's speculating that. As a matter of fact, you know, it's funny. I was watching this yesterday on CNN, even though I know half of it is propaganda. But, you know, CNN actually reported something real for once. And it's interesting. They mentioned that Iran is not really following through with their plans of, you know, manufacturing a nuclear weapon anymore, or not as obsessively as previously. So does that mean that the United States will take the problem into a different direction? Are we going to stop hunting them down, in a sense? Are we going to stop hounding at them? And one politician came up and actually said this, and it made me laugh. He said, well, be that as it may, it's not because that they stopped doing it. No, it's because the fact that they attempted to do it. So we're punishing them for something that they have done, assumably, or we don't know really if they did it. You know what I mean? And we are actually going to wage a war on the assumption that they attempted to manufacture their own nuclear weapon.
Well, just like Iran supposedly, they were going to kill a Saudi diplomat. That was such BS and such flimsy crap that they, you know, based that on. I think as far as these other countries, though, Muhammad Ali had it right when he said back in the 60s when he refused the draft, he said, no Viet Cong ever called me nigger. So even if an Arab or a Muslim did call me Dago or WAP or Spick, I wouldn't care, but it's not worth getting thousands of my brethren killed because somebody called me a name.
Or for somebody, or in this case, killing all of them for one guy who said that.
Exactly. And this is coming from, you know, largely the neocons who are largely Christian Zionist, and then, of course, the Israeli lobby. They're a very important part of the equation, which I never back away from. And you hear all the media, what about Israel? Would you defend Israel? Israel, Israel. What the hell is that all about? That's, you know, since 1948, they've been a drag on our country and our economy because we've aided them. Before 1948, the U.S. had no enemies in the Middle East. And this has all been since then. And now their Mossad is very powerful. They've infiltrated our military and our government. You know, they got their tentacles throughout the world. So that's the scary part, Mossad. And, of course, they're in league with the CIA and Britain's MI6. So, you know, together they are the masters of deception.
Well, yeah. There would be
clearly
one of. No, I would say one of. There's a lot
others?
Of hidden. No, well, there's a lot of hidden agendas behind there. You know this, and I know this. And you know.
So,
they are maybe they are the ones that shine through. Perhaps you know that
easily.
They say, ah, screw you, catch it or not catch it, see it or don't see it, it's going to happen, like it or not.
So tell me, Dr. Ray, what about Egypt? What's going to happen? Is the military going to allow elections? What, you know? I knew this would happen. What's going to happen?
I knew that would happen too.
You know, prognosis.
I know. I knew that. Well, the writing is on the wall. You know,
sure.
Whenever a corrupt system collapses, odds are the corruption doesn't go away overnight, and that's exactly what happened. The military does not want the elections to go through to give power to the civilians. They want to keep ruling the country. Of course, when you rule the country, you have power. And when you have power, you can do whatever you want. It's a free ticket to do whatever you want. And so the military doesn't want to lose that. They don't want to lose that foothold, if you will. We have you under our feet. We're going to keep you under our feet. We want the power. Civilians, on the other end, are trying to organize a government. And it's not going to happen. Not anytime soon. Not anytime soon. I don't think so. It's going to mushroom up even more, I think. And it's only going to continue on a little further. And by a little further, I would say by the end of next year, hopefully, it starts to wind down, where the military has to understand that you cannot rule the people, not for long anyway. And as long as they keep doing what they're doing right now, people are going to keep revoluting and taking to the streets. Here's the problem with that, though. We don't know if the military, specifically in Egypt, we don't know if the military is actually paying the thugs to go down the streets and threaten people. And at the same time, we don't know if the thugs are actually working for the previous administration, because there are allegations that the previous administration is running the country only in the background. They're not up front, and they're not, of course, the presidency, so on and so forth, but they still run the show.
Where's Mubarak now?
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about, Mubarak.
Is he in jail and awaiting trial in Egypt?
No, which is ironic. Why the people are revoluting, if you think about it. We threw him out of office. We want the money that he stole from our government. We want the money for the people. And you know what's happening is that they can't take their money back because, well, the military is the one that supposedly is in charge of taking him to court and, filing reports and exposing him and collecting the money back. What's happening is that the current government, which is the military, is not doing so. They're showing them going to court. They are going to take them to court. And be that as it may, convicted, guilty or not, it's not changing anything. They're walking free. They're walking free, much like you and I.
So who's in charge? The top generals? Are they basically running the country?
Yes, correctly.
Wow. That's too bad.
Of course.
I didn't think there'd be elections very soon. So you think there might be some later next year, 2012?
I would say so, yes.
I think America it's going to be worse next year. The economy and everything else is going to be worse. I'm not optimistic about the future.
I'm not optimistic about the future myself, to be honest.
Other candidates are warmongers, and so is Obama. So the globalist, the military-industrial complex has its man. Obama's dancing for them big time, and anybody else is too. But Ron Paul won't. And that's a big difference. So he's outside.
That.
That's why he's disliked. And so many people think, oh, our foreign policy, he'll mess things up. Oh, really? And they call him a kook and a crank. Well, excuse me, what do we have right now from both parties? They're not the kooks and the cranks who, along with the Federal Reserve, have helped destroy the economy, expand the wars, and further bankrupt the country. But Ron Paul is the kook and the crank, supposedly. They got the shoe on the wrong foot. Boy, are they wrong.
Well, that's aside from that. But, in Egypt, I would say next year sometime, it should regain some sort of, political and internal policies put in order. Right now, the people are revoluting, and there's a lot of chaos going on the streets of Cairo, specifically Cairo. The reason why people are going crazy, it's because they believe that their revolution got hijacked. And they have every right to. They have every right to think that way, I think, in my opinion. It's just that right now they're trying to create a divide and conquer sort of a strategy. At first, believe it or not, the people, be that as it may, Christians, Muslims, so on and so forth, they stood together and they stood one hand, one voice, one power. Now they try to separate and segregate them. Oh, the Christians want to take power. So they started making their own revolution, and they pushed their way. This is back in October, by the way, and this is a fact, true story. A bunch of Christians actually walked around in crosses in the middle of the road, and the military opened fire. Now, as the military opened fire, it happened to be by the national TV station. And the TV station, the lady who was videotaping this whole thing, she started saying, oh, the Christians want to take power. The Christians want to overthrow the government. The Christians want to overthrow Islamics and the Islam belief and their anti-God and so on and so forth.
Huh.
And that, believe it or not, that was the truth. It's not manufactured by any chance. I mean, this I can show you.
They're a small minority in Egypt, though. Coptic Christians?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Christians are actually counted for 25% of the population.
I thought it was like 10%.
No,
well,
but
still, there's no trouble of them overthrowing, you know, changing things. I just hope that the military doesn't, you know, slaughter more people in the streets and causing, more grief and more death and suffering and destruction. So, I'll tell you what, come to the end of the show for right now, Dr. Race. Thank you so much for coming on and giving your viewpoint on things. You're very enlightened about all this, and your speaking style is upbeat and fun to talk with. So
thank you.
Really appreciate that. And
I appreciate it.
I like speaking with another American who has a clue about the rest of the world, because so many don't. And as I like to gloat, I'm an American who actually knows world history and geography. And I'm an
true.
American who actually knows and realizes that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world. And I love my country, and I'm proud, da-da-da-da-da, but not in your face about it. I'm thankful, but not in your face. But I still realize that there's a hell of a big world out there, and America does not have a monopoly on hard work, innovation, technology, and education, or beautiful women. So with that, I'm going to say thanks again, Dr. Ray, as I sign
Thank
off
you.
Here, everybody, for Monday evening, December 26th, 2011. I'll be back here next week, the same time, here at BBS Radio, Station 2, 855 Pacific, 1055 Central, and 1155 Eastern. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm saying good night and Happy New Year.